Next time you stand around the office water cooler and start to blather about how your boss messed up an important meeting or a coworker's still secret pregnancy, don't feel guilty. Gossip, researchers tell us, is natural. Every culture does it, and it's not just the province of women. Men do it in about equal measure. Despite its nasty reputation, studies show it can be a good thing. For one, it serves as a potent form of social control. It's an important way for groups to define themselves. And if it's not too cruel, gossip can help reduce anxiety, even make you feel better. Some studies trace this basic, some say base, human behavior back to the grooming habits of our primate ancestors. Research on gossip could explain why even the most dutiful among us can't help but scan the tabloid headlines for the latest on Lindsay Lohan before turning to the front page of the New York Times. Later in this program, what does your credit card statement say about you? In her new book, Amy Borkowski argues that it's a kind of diary that tells us more than we might suspect about our lives. But first, why we gossip. Here's your chance to come clean. What do you gossip about and why? If you've ever been a victim of gossip, how did you recover your sullied reputation? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Jack Levin, a professor of sociology and criminology at Northeastern University in Boston, author of the book Gossip, The Inside Scoop. He joins us from the studios of member station WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for asking me.
So gossip is a universal trait for mankind?
Mm-hmm. You know, it really is. It's been referred to as intellectual chewing gum because it's as prevalent as breathing. And even where it's despised and leaders in charge have tried to get rid of it, it flourishes and spreads and prospers. There are some societies where they'll literally cut off your lips for gossiping about the chief, but that doesn't seem to stop anybody from gossiping either. And in rural Mexican villages, it's really a stigma to be the victim of gossip, but the same residents will routinely send their children next door to spy on the neighbors and get some good dirt.
And so this owning a piece of a good piece of dirt, that's value. That's currency.
You know, you're right. It certainly enhances your status. But there is a norm of reciprocity. You can gossip, but you don't want to do it too much. You have to be able to receive it as well as give it. Otherwise, you're labeled, a gossip monger or a yenta. There's always some word for it in one language or another.
But not often a nice one.
Exactly. It is nasty. But if, on the other hand, you don't participate in the gossip, you're isolated. You are kind of eliminated from social networks. So, you know, it's good to be in there and gossiping with the rest of them.
Let's define our terms here. How is gossip different from other kinds of conversation?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that because, you know, the first thing that people are going to think of is pejorative, nasty, vicious, backstabbing talk about other people. But people say nice things about one another. We should call that gossip, too, because it is. And that's what gossip is all about. It's a message that we transmit by word of mouth, or maybe the media as well, about the lives of other people. It could be their personal lives. It could be their working lives. It's usually, by the way, transmitted when those people aren't around to hear it, which can be troublesome if the information is negative.
Yeah, well, that's normally the, did you hear what so-and-so did to so, you know, that sort of stuff.
You know, there are people who are gossiped about, they're scorned, they're ridiculed by the neighbors, and they never understand why they're excluded from all of the social events down the block. So it's interesting to note that children will gossip right in front of the victim in the form of teasing, which sounds very cruel, and it is. But at the same time, children learn from that gossip. The victim learns what he's doing to offend others, and in some cases can actually change his behavior.
So that's where you get into the policing aspect of group dynamic.
You know, that's how I got interested in gossip, because I've studied other phenomena like murder and hate crimes, and gossip is a form of social control. It's a way of bringing people into line, those people who are violating our values and our norms. We think of the criminal justice system when we think of social control, and that's the formal way of doing it. But in many communities, gossip is the primary means of keeping people in line. You shame them. You ridicule them. You humiliate them. And if they don't comply, they are ostracized. So it's a very powerful form of social control in many closed communities where an individual really doesn't have a choice but to lead his whole life there. And you know, everything occurs there and everything is dependent on being accepted by others.
Mm-hmm. There's also another aspect of the group dynamic, which is, let's say the culture is everybody works really, really late. They're a bunch of young lawyers, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then they gossip about the guy who leaves early.
Well, that's what's bringing him into line. You know, you don't have to penalize him with a demotion. You don't have to deny him a raise. It brings people into line, and it defines the insiders from the outsiders. You know, anthropologists like Dunbar have talked about grooming, you mentioned that, mm-hmm. as kind of the glue that held the apes together in small groups. They groomed one another as a positive attribute and a social occasion. Well, in humans, we can't do that really that well. People would misunderstand it, I'm afraid. But we have language. And you know, when somebody moves into a neighborhood or moves into the next desk at the office, he or she will know whether he belongs, whether he's accepted, or she is now an insider, by whether the other workers or the other neighbors will share gossip with them. If that gossip is not shared, they're still outsiders. So it is the glue that holds groups together.
Our number, if you'd like to join us or even gossip a little bit, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Lake. Lake calling us from Jacksonville, Florida. Who do you gossip about and why?
Well, I was calling to let y'all know I'm a supervisor of a 28 all-male construction crew dealing with concrete and stuff like that. All 28 of my big, strong men are the biggest gossipers I've ever seen. It doesn't matter what they're talking about. It's gossip. They gossip about each other. They gossip about politics. They gossip about celebrities. I just wanted all the women to know out there in America that, you know, the men are just as bad as they are. And I think it's just like, you know, it's definitely a way for them to talk about something at work that takes their mind off the heat and how hard they're working.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought it was really funny, you know, that y'all brought that up. That, yeah, these guys, big, hairy, strong, strappy men who would never, ever admit it. And they always complain about it, you know, when they're not talking it. But they're out there every day doing it.
Jack Levin, the studies do show that men gossip about as much as women. Do they gossip about the same things?
Well, not necessarily. They do gossip as much when it comes to nasty, scandalous, vicious, derogatory talk about others. When women talk, they are more likely to talk about other people, but not necessarily in a nasty way. And when they talk, they're more likely to gossip about people they know well, intimates, mm-hmm. close friends, relatives. I think it has a lot to do with the gender gap that still puts spaces between men and women. When men gossip, they'll more likely gossip about acquaintances, strangers, celebrities, sports figures. But it's still gossip. It's still talk about other people.
Lake, thanks very much.
All right, thank you.
Take care. As he mentioned, we do like to gossip about the famous and the celebrities. Joining us now is Lloyd Grove. He writes the Lowdown column for the New York Daily News, and he's with us by phone from New York. Nice to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Gossip business is a pretty dog-eat-dog there in New York, isn't it?
Well, we got these two tabloids, my paper and the New York Post, and we're in a big tabloid war. It's really fun, actually, and we go at each other hammer and tongs.
So it's you and Page Six every day?
Every day. Well, I'm only 5 days a week. There are Saturday and Sunday, but the Daily News has a lot of other good gossip columns.
Well, Liz Smith, of course, too, yeah.
Absolutely.
What function does a gossip column serve for its readers?
To entertain them, to draw them into the newspaper, to make them laugh, titillate them, just make them buy papers, essentially.
I wonder, is there an element in it, do you think, of making us fork over a quarter for our paper, 50 cents these days, I suppose.
The news is 50 cents.
Yeah. To make us feel a little bit better because we know that, you know, Madonna's having difficulties?
Absolutely. That's one of the main appeals of gossip columns is to bring rich and famous people down to where we live and make us feel they're equal, which we are, absolutely.
Jack Levin, let me get your take on that. This is a phenomenon known, I guess, the more and more popular German word Schadenfreude, taking joy in the difficulties of others.
Well, you know, misery does love miserable company. And gossip gives us a chance. Now, we're talking about negative gossip. Gives us a chance to take these successful, wealthy, beautiful people and, as Lloyd points out, you know, put them down a notch so that our own problems pale by comparison. But I have to add that a little dirt doesn't always damage your reputation. If you're credible to begin with, then a little dirt in a celebrity or a politician or even just an everyday person can actually humanize you so that people can identify you. You know, you're one of the boys, you're one of the girls. So we don't like perfect people. You know, George Washington had wooden teeth and Jefferson had slaves and we still admire and revere them. Gossip is a way of just dirtying the reputation of someone and yet at the same time humanizing them.
Speaking of dirt, though, it can actually make a career. Look at Paris Hilton, whose whole entire career rocketed to stardom on her sex video.
Indeed. And I think some celebrities have been known to plant some items in order to get not necessarily just attention, but enhance their reputation.
I'm shocked to hear you suggest that.
Oh, well, I'm sure it hasn't happened in your paper.
Oh, not at all.
We're going to take a short break. At least that's what I've heard. And then when we come back, we'll take more of your calls and emails on the subject of gossip. Why do we do it? What purpose does it serve? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN at NPR.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Science researchers tell us the urge to gossip serves a real and often positive social function. We want to hear the latest hearsay from you, especially if you've ever started a rumor about yourself or if you've been the victim of somebody else's big mouth. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is TOTN at NPR.org. Our guests are Jack Levin, a sociologist and criminologist at Northeastern University in Boston, author of the book Gossip, the Inside Scoop. Also with us is Lloyd Grove, who writes the Lowdown column for the New York Daily News. And Lloyd, before he went to New York, used to write the Reliable Source column here for the Washington Post. Is there a difference between gossip in New York and Washington?
Well, sure, in the sense that Washington's a company town. Everything's through the prism of government and politics. And New York is, you know, there are about 20 major industries that are headquartered here, everything from Broadway to movies to finance to obviously real estate is big in New York. And there are people, very interesting people, involved in all these industries, and it's my job to write about them.
I wonder if you've given any thought. It's not only columnists like you, but entire magazines, People Magazine, then the tabloids, which a little less closer relationship with the truth. And there's been this commodification of gossip.
Well, sure. It's very, very profitable. And magazines have enormous amounts of money, for instance, to pay paparazzi who are following celebrities all around through their daily lives. The reason they do that is they're well paid for it. And the reason they're well paid is because readers like to see these pictures and buy the magazines. So, yeah, I'm a bit better paid as a gossip columnist than I was when I was a legitimate journalist.
Why did you decide to get into it?
Besides
the money, of course.
Asked and answered, Neil. It's something that I was very resistant to begin with. I was at the Washington Post, and I was a profile writer mainly on the style section. And they asked me to take over the Reliable Source column, and I said, no way, I don't want to do that. But, thought about it. They sweetened the deal a bit, and I found out that I had a knack for it. And it is a fascinating job, being a gossip columnist. And I have to say that gossip is very loosely used as a word, as a term of art, because mm-hmm. it's not gossip. It's really journalism. And, you know, if I print something wrong about somebody, I can get sued. And even here at the Daily News, or especially here at the Daily News, you know, we take great pains to be accurate. And if something is a bit hot, well, it goes through lawyers, and it's we're pretty careful about what we write.
Where do you get your stuff from? From gossips?
I get it from gossips. I get it from people who want to drop a dime on their rivals in various industries. I get it from people who just get a little bit of a thrill, you know, calling gossip columnists and seeing their handiwork without their names in the newspaper. And God bless everybody who calls, because that's the lifeblood of this business.
Is there one story that you would point to say, you know, that's the one that really made my mark?
Well, here's the thing. I'm writing five columns a week, and, you know, each column has about five or six different stories in it. So I just want to make everything, you know, as fascinating and titillating as possible. A story with conflict, sex, money. I'm thinking the one that just comes to mind was there was a little incident over at a sister paper, the New York Times, where the management of the Times decided that somebody in the Baghdad bureau was writing letters to the wives of other correspondents in the bureau suggesting inappropriate behavior out in the field. And so that was a hot item that people talked about for a while.
Hmm. Lloyd Grove, we'll let you get back to work. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Neil.
Lloyd Grove writes the Lowdown column for the New York Daily News. He was kind enough to join us from the office of the Daily News there on 42nd Street in Manhattan. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Tracy. Tracy calling from Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have got a group of friends. There's about 10 of us. We range in age from probably 30 to 45, and we've been together for about 11 years, and we call ourselves either the tribe or each other's chosen family.
Mm-hmm.
But we are there for each other for everything, singles, married, male, female. And it's just a given that if somebody doesn't show up at some event, they're going to be talked about. And we accept it, and we know it, and we all know that we all have things that bother the other people, and it's just a good way to vent our frustrations or laugh about the things that people do that are a little quirky, and it doesn't compromise the affection that we have for each other at all.
I also suggest that attendance is probably pretty good.
Yes.
Jack Levin, yeah. Is that one of the social functions that gossip can play?
Well, you know, Neil, that's the social control function that I mentioned. You know, it brings people back in the line. And as you point out, it makes sure that attendance is pretty good at all events. If someone were to continue to miss meetings, I don't think the good feeling would last, at least to that person. That person would sooner or later be seen as an outsider. That's punishment. And so people will attend.
And that has happened. That's certainly true, that there are people who have, you know, drifted out some, and when they're talked about now, it's not certainly with the favor that it used to be.
So you're going to be at the next meeting of the tribe, eh?
Always. We were there last night, and we'll be there again tomorrow night.
Okay.
So.
have a good time.
Thank you.
All right. Here's an email we got from Katie. I've come to believe that gossip can actually serve an important social function when something painful has happened, like a romantic breakup that people would notice, but that I wouldn't necessarily want to explain to everybody I know. I would just assume that word got around to save me the trouble.
Well, that's interesting, because one thing about gossip and rumor is that you don't have to take responsibility for it. Even if it's really nasty, and in some cases that's exactly what it is, and it's used to get revenge against people we don't like. That's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But because the source gets separated from the message, and the message is transmitted widely, you can't trace these things back to the original person who first transmitted the news. And it makes it possible to say almost anything you want.
Let's get another caller in on the line. This is Lewis. Lewis calling from Wisconsin Rapids in Wisconsin.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I totally disagree. I think the gossip is extremely negative. And the examples I'd like to use is, at my job, one of my co-workers got a new car. And people, you know, they, I thought it was a great car, and I was real happy for him, but people were like, well, he didn't pay for it, and his dad probably helped him. See, I don't understand that. Instead of us being complimentary or okay with his success and his happiness of his new car, I get lost in the gossip thing because a lot of times I don't see the value of the circulation. Most of it isn't true. Twice I was late for work. It got gossip. Oh, he's late all the time. Nobody ever asks Lewis what happened. Was it an issue? See, and I just see it differently. I'm more inclined to ask you versus to make a judgment on whatever your actions are. I get lost in it. So I don't know about this being constructive or healthy. I just know that 80% of the gossip I hear is untrue. 80% of it, like you said earlier, is personal, like a vindictiveness toward each other. I don't like the fight aspect of it.
Yeah, so. Jack Levin, certainly if you're the victim of the gossip, it can be uncomfortable and not positive at all.
That's true, and Lewis is a victim, and he doesn't want to be a perpetrator, and more power to him. And of course some gossip is negative. I studied gossip among college students. I found out about one-third of their gossip was negative, about one-third was neutral, and then about one-third was positive. All I'm saying is that we forget about the positive gossip. You know, the best, the most valuable information you can get in an office is often around the water cooler. You know, that's the water cooler grapevine. And someone comes to a new company and is in the office. He can read the official company brochure and the handbook for employees and find out about insurance and other fringe benefits. But if he wants to find out how long it takes to get a promotion or a raise, who to go to for advice, who to ignore in the office, he'd better listen to the gossip around the water cooler, because that's going to be much more valuable.
Lewis, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Here's an email we got from David in Phoenix, Arizona. When I was in high school, I started the rumor that I was gay, which was in fact true. I did it for two reasons, I think. One, I thought my classmates would be more accepting if they thought I was a victim of a rumor. And two, to see if I might be approached by any of my schoolmates. The insane thing, he writes, is that it seemed to work on both fronts.
Fascinating, really. You know, using gossip and rumor in a constructive way. You know, there are employers who kind of do the same thing with a job freeze or layoffs mm-hmm. that are coming down the road. They don't want to do it formally, so they put it in the grapevine and let it work itself around the office. By the time they give the formal announcement, everybody knows.
Yeah, the sting is out of it, yeah.
Yeah.
In some industries, managing gossip or stopping it dead in its tracks can be full-time work. The world of professional sports is especially rife with loose lips. Look no further than the ongoing yet rapid-fire spread of rumors surrounding Lance Armstrong and his alleged use of steroids. Joining us now is Nova Langtree, Vice President of Marketing Services for CSMG International, a sports management and consulting firm. She joined us by phone from her office in Skokie, Illinois. Thanks very much for being with us today.
You're very welcome. It's such a... I was eavesdropping in the conversation, and it's a very, very fascinating subject.
Well, publicists say that there's no such thing as bad publicity, even if it's an unsubstantiated rumor. Is that true?
I understand what the, you know, merits of a comment are. I understand why a publicist would say that, because it can provide an opportunity to respond to the rumor, it can, to the publicity one way or the other, give you a chance to vindicate yourself.
Mm-hmm. And your name's in the paper.
I think overall, though, people don't want to have to do the damage control about bad publicity.
Obviously, sports is a huge industry in this country and around the world. The thirst for gossip, how much has it grown in your time in the business?
The thirst for gossip.
Yeah,
it's so funny. When I got the call this morning about what we're going to be talking about, I don't think I ever evaluated the subject matter in that way. I've been in the business for 20 years, and I've negotiated some of the biggest, you know, contracts for the biggest advertisers with the most important sports celebrities. And my overview has always been, let's watch out for it. There's not a thirst for it. We want to be very careful about it, because advertisers have the sole discretion to terminate marketing contracts if you cause scandal or controversy. So I've never thought about it in the way that you folks are discussing it today. I think it seems to be human nature, you know, like Eli Manning's going out with Lindsay Lohan. We love stuff like that.
Right.
We love to know Jeff Garcia is dating a playmate. I don't know why we do, but we seem to be very excited by information like that. Maybe one of the reasons sociologically is that we tend to feel a connection to the people that we watch either in entertainment or sports. We want to know them. So we hear stuff like that, we feel a stronger connection. And maybe even though we haven't been given the rights to it, we feel like we have a right to know it. That stuff it's relatively harmless unless, of course, one of those guys who's been seen with Lindsay Lohan is married and he's committing adultery. Then it's not just fun water cooler talk. Then it's malicious, and then it really can do damage to someone's life.
We're talking about gossip, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Nova Langtry, I did want to ask that in another aspect of the sports business, in maybe the agent side of it, there's often rumors that, say, Eli Manning becomes a free agent that, oh, well, gee, the 49ers are really interested in signing him for a lot of money. Giants, you better pay up.
And you are asking me...
Does this go on? Obviously, these are, to some degree, planted rumors.
You know, it's not an area of the industry that I have direct contact with, but as an industry observer, I know that that does exist. What I don't know and what I can't share with you with any sense of authority, it works. I know that it's a generally frowned upon practice that you will hear competitive agents saying, I don't negotiate for my clients in the newspapers and whatnot. And most of those discussions are considered quite confidential. As a matter of fact, most of those agreements have confidentiality clauses in them.
Hmm.
So what part of it is really beneficial to the negotiations? I could give a cynical response to it by saying that so many agents they know what they're doing, and if they think it will help their negotiations, they will be sure to pull out all stops. I just want to make it clear that I don't really have a direct and authorized handle on that process.
Nova Langtry, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
You're so welcome.
She's Vice President of Marketing Services for CSMG International, a sports management firm, and joined us from her office in Skokie, Illinois. Now let's get another caller on the line. This is Yasmin. Yasmin calling from Lebanon, Ohio.
Hello.
Hi, Yasmin. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good.
I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
A lot for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to say that I do agree that gossip can provide a very important social control policing act, because, you know, if you just compare from 50 years ago when people used to gossip about someone having a child out of wedlock and the statistics that, you know, there were a lot less of them.
Mm-hmm.
Today, nobody talks about it because it's not gossip. It's, you know, that whole taboo is gone.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, I think that has a lot to do with it. Social control has always played, you know, gossip, that, you know, those kind of things have always played a role in social control, I believe. And
Jack Levin, is what we gossip about a barometer of social change?
I totally
agree. Oh, I think so. I'm not sure it causes the change. It's probably reciprocal. But certainly it'll tell you what's deviant, what's normal, what's accepted, what's not accepted. You know, sometimes we've used gossip and rumor as a way of controlling crime. For example, in many cities and small communities, the Johns who frequent prostitutes are arrested, and then their photos and their identification are featured in local newspapers or on the internet or on cable access television programs. And what they hope to do is to shame people so that the prostitution declines. It really bothers me when that happens, by the way. I know it's social control, but the problem is that some of these guys who are often middle-class, middle-aged men with families will commit suicide. Their wives and their children are stigmatized, embarrassed, humiliated. So sometimes gossip's social control function can go too far, I'm afraid.
Yasmin, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Jack Levin, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Jack Levin, a sociologist and criminologist at Northeastern University in Boston. He joined us from the studios of WRNI, our member station in Providence, Rhode Island. He's the author of the book Gossip, The Inside Scoop. When we come back from a short break, the tales they do tell, credit card statements. A writer recounts her life by pouring through her credit card purchases and her returns. So take the next minute or two and dig up a recent statement. Does it make for good memories, or at least a good read? Take a look, then give us a call about the story that one of those statements triggers. 800-989-8255. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.